Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. I know it's Friday and, oh, you're just looking forward to the weekend. But we have another fabulous physician on this week. And I think, again, as you've heard me say so many times, the more we can become educated about ourselves and how we can take care of ourselves and become aware that wellness is our personal responsibility and that we need to be consciously attentive to ourselves on so many levels, the better off we are going to be. And for all the discouragement you may get about the conversation regarding the healthcare system, etc., my guest today, Dr. Clark, is a man that has a view of compassion and understanding that I think you will enjoy. In fact, I know you'll enjoy listening to him. His recent publication is They Can't Find Anything Wrong. Now, this especially is relating to illnesses that are caused by stress. Dr. Clark, I'm going to welcome you to the show.
It's great to be with you, Donna. Thank you.
Now, you have made this a main focus, stress, which is one of the biggest facilitators for illness around, better than any swine flu as far as I'm concerned. This is something that is not often spoken about, and you have been at different hospitals throughout the world. You were named top doctor in the Portland Monthly Magazine Physician Review in 2005 and 2006. You are a clinical assistant professor of medicine with Oregon Health and Sciences University, a clinical instructor at Pacific University, and a member of the Academy of Psychosomatic Medicine. You have been board certified in a number of different arenas of medicine, and you've been in Portland since 1984. And you, interestingly enough, are the ethics director for Northwest Permanente, and you've been recognized by your peers on so many different levels. I'm so pleased we were able to get you on the air. I understand your flight was delayed, so you had a bit of a challenge with weather. Of course, we've got some storms here in the Pacific Northwest. But as a physician, as a man who is dedicated to doing no harm, I'd like to ask you a question about the medical profession. First, I'd like
Fire
to...
Fire away.
Okay. I'd like to ask a question. Actually, two. What is the biggest obstacle that you see as a medical professional that you have to deal with in the medical industry? And two, what's the most positive shift that you see evolving in medicine? I know that's rather broad, but just give us your insights.
Well, the biggest obstacle is that most healthcare professionals, whether they be physicians or in other lines of work in the healthcare profession, are not getting any formal training in the whole area of stress medicine. And what I mean by that is that about half the people who go to see a primary care clinician, after a year's worth of diagnostic testing, the vast majority of them will not have any explanation for their symptoms. And it turns out that most of them, there's some kind of stress behind their symptoms, and you have to know what to look for to bring that out into the open, because those stresses are hidden. They're not fully recognized by the people who have them, and it takes a certain amount of training in order to know where to look to uncover those things. Now, the good news for your listeners is that once those hidden stresses are brought out into the open, there's almost always effective treatment available. So we can turn some very difficult situations, some prolonged and severe illnesses around just by knowing where to look. So that's the most discouraging thing for me, is that most healthcare professionals are just blind to this whole area of medical care. The most positive thing is that once people learn that it's not that difficult to investigate these issues, and that once you do find them, that people can be made better, they really appreciate and respond to that. I get invited to speak about this all over the United States. I'm in San Diego right now to speak at two different conferences that are both interested in this material. So people want to help their patients. They just don't know how. And once they learn what to do, they are responding very, very positively to it.
In your book, one of the very first quotes that you have is by Janet Greason. It's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you. And it brought to mind when I read that the old statements by the kahunas of Hawaii, the very same thing. Many times those people that would be in the healing aspect would say to someone that came to them, what is eating at you? That was just a little bit of a spin on that. But that is so significant because even long time ago, there were those who were savvy enough and understood enough about the human condition where they realized that something that went on in that person's life, whether it was relative to their own beliefs, their own thinking patterns, or to patterns of the environment that they were in, something was stimulating a stress level that couldn't help but demonstrate itself in the body via illness of some kind. Sometimes people that are accident prone have patternings like this. Now, you say some things in your book. Diseases we can describe as visible illnesses. And you've learned that by asking the right questions, it's possible to find answers and diagnoses which lead to treatments and cures, which is following up with what you've just said. The chapter title in your book is, What is Your Body Trying to Tell You? Give us one of your cases that really stands out in your mind that as a young physician brought your attention to the fact that there were these underlying causes that created a very uncomfortable and very sick patient.
Well, you know, I have one of my favorite examples is, and I'm glad you asked that because this, I think, will make it clear to your listeners exactly what we're talking about here. This was a woman who was a librarian in the Seattle area, and she just came down in the middle of her 30s with an attack that made her very dizzy, and she had vomiting, and she couldn't keep anything down, and she had to be hospitalized for intravenous fluids, and this attack went on for several days. She had a number of diagnostic tests that didn't show anything, but she recovered on her own and went home and was fine for a couple of months, and then she had another attack, and then a couple months later another attack, and she began having these somewhere between 6 and 10 times a year. She began to see a whole lot of specialists who were also unable to figure out why she was ill. After 2 years of this, she was seen by a psychiatrist who tried to figure out if she was crazy and determined that she didn't have any mental health issues at all, which is the case for the majority of my patients. And then this went on for another 15 years. She was hospitalized a total of 60 times at the university up there with no diagnosis. But when I got to see her, she had happened to have one of her attacks when she was in Portland, which is where I work. And I just asked her about 5 different areas of stress, which is routine for me, and came up with the fact that she had been emotionally abused by her mother when she was growing up. And it turns out that childhood stress, surprisingly, is one of the main causes of stress-related illness in adults. And not only had her mother emotionally abused her as a child, but the mother was still doing it to her, even though my patient was now 50 years old and the mother was in her 70s. So that was the first key piece of information. The second key piece of information that helped everything fall into place was that my patient, although most of her attacks were happening in and around where she lived, she would always get one of her attacks whenever she passed through a town about 45 minutes south of Seattle. I don't think it was Tacoma, but it was somewhere in that area. Mm-hmm. And it had seemed to have a magic triggering effect where it would always make her ill. And nobody could figure that out either, but it turned out the only time she was ever going through that little town was when she was on her way to visit her mother, who lived a few hours further down the road. And once we made that connection and we brought that enormous emotional tension that was hidden way in the back of her brain somewhere, brought that out into the open. Then we were able to treat it successfully, and the bottom line is she never had another attack.
Fabulous. That is absolutely amazing. You say in your book that there are three steps that a person themselves can go through to see if stress is the cause. One, you can get an evaluation by your doctor. And two, you make a list of sources of stress in your life that might be capable of causing illness. And three, applying the 7 key principles, which you go into quite a bit of depth in your book, for reducing or eliminate the causes and consequences of the stress. And I know personally, I have had situations in my life where I became aware at a very young age how when you're in situations that are not right for you, that they're often the only way the body knows how to deal with stress, if you don't have a healthy outlet for it, is it will create a condition that demands your attention. And there are people throughout the ages, the Arabs knew about this centuries ago, but it's so tough in today's world where everything seems to be a very, very high level of stress, and people are expected to perform very intensely, which isn't all bad, but there's all kinds of components that create stress. And like you mentioned, this case, this woman was carrying something that went a long way back, and she was actually living it every single day.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And many of my patients, they're still living with it, even though they have no further contact with the people that treated them badly when they were children. Now, this woman was actually a little bit unusual that her mother was still creating difficulties for her after so many years. But other patients of mine, they think that they've left those issues in the past, and yet they're still lurking in there. And you made another, or alluded to another point that I wanted to make as well, which is that these symptoms are absolutely real. I mean, they are not imaginary. They are not in people's heads. They are every bit as real as symptoms caused by any other disease that I deal with in my practice. It's a very physiological process that's producing this. The stress is coming in from the outside world. The brain is having to process it. But if the stress level is too high or it's going on for too long, the brain may simply unload that stress into the body is probably the simplest way to think about it. And when those nerve signals from the brain get where they're going, they're fully capable of causing symptoms. So this is something that, again, is just not appreciated well enough by the healthcare profession as a whole. But when we can convert those bodily expressions of stress into words, into thinking, into speaking, into outward expressions of emotion, then we can make real progress.
You have a sentence in your book, the physical symptoms of stress illness occur when nerve signals from stress response system persist for too long at too high a level. So that's just a compliment to what you say. You talk about 5 types of stress: childhood stress, which we've been discussing, stress occurring now, stress from a traumatic event, stress from depression, a mental health condition, and stress from an anxiety disorder, a mental health condition. I think that those are good categories to look at. Many times people will experience, like so many are today, a real anxiousness because economically maybe they've lost their job or they're under pressure that they may not have a job. Or like a couple I heard about, both the wife and the husband lost their jobs and they have a family to support. So you have these kinds of stresses. You have traumatic stresses, an accident. There's just all kinds of things that can go on for that. And then depression and or maybe a mental health condition. And then anxiety, which all of that just sort of folds in together, doesn't it? Depression, anxiety, trauma, they're all partners.
Yeah, you can definitely have people who are experiencing more than one of those at a time. One of the issues that crops up for a lot of people is that they think they know what depression and post-trauma and anxiety disorders are, but in many cases, they can sneak into your life in ways that you might not recognize. For example, I have a large number of my patients who are clearly suffering from the disease we call depression. But if you ask them, do you feel depressed, they don't particularly. They might feel exasperated or frustrated or exhausted. But when I ask them straight out, do you feel depressed, you know, honestly, they don't feel that way. But the disease can affect people in other ways that I can recognize and make a diagnosis. It can affect their sleeping, causing them to wake up in the early hours of the morning and have difficulty getting back to sleep. It can make you really tired. It can cause you to lose interest in things you used to love to do. You may find yourself crying for little or no reason. So these are all clues that that disease is lurking in there. Even in people who don't have that that feeling of depression that we typically expect to see.
All of this means that we as individuals need to really pay attention, and when something is chronic. And I've known so many clients through the years where they've talked to physicians, and physicians will say, just like you said earlier, it's all in your head. Or, gee, you're getting older, this is just what you're going to go through. Or, well, grow up, get over it, get a life, get busy. And I look at this and I think, wow, we have become so detached in so many ways. The average physician is lucky if he can spend 10 to 15 minutes with a patient. How much time do you spend with a patient, Dr. Clark? You have to spend some time with them. Otherwise, you wouldn't even have time to ask questions.
Yeah, well, I was very fortunate that my boss, when he recognized the kinds of benefits I was providing for patients, he gave me 60-minute appointments so that I could do a full, proper interview and get to know my patients as human beings and not just as a collection of symptoms. And that was really important. But even physicians who have much shorter visits, I encourage them to look into each of the five different types of stress one by one, and it can be spread out over a number of visits. You know, if you go back to my librarian patient from Seattle, if her doctors had just spent 5 or 10 minutes during each one of her 60 hospital stays asking her the right questions, they would have made her diagnosis in a lot less than 15 years.
That is just fabulous to me. You say you've cared for hundreds of patients after they have been treated through surgery for appendix, ovary, uterus, or gallbladder. They still had pains, and I can think of a number of people that I know, in fact, I'm aware of a family right now, that all of the women, every single one of them in the family, have had a major problem with a significant organ in the body. And it's as if something's being passed along that encourages the ongoing process of this kind of misery. And I watch it and I observe it, and whenever I can, I just drop a little seed of thought into conversation, especially with one member of the family. But I look at this and I think how sad that they are not aware of the right questions to ask themselves. And every single one of them are under extreme stress. And they've had to have surgeries, but they still have the problems, just like you mentioned in your book. And I thought, boy, I'm going to have to get this to them somehow, because they need to become aware of this.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's why I wrote the book as essentially a collection of stories. There are about 4 dozen stories. There are a couple of excerpted stories on the website, stressillness.com, by the way. But the stories are designed to illustrate the full spectrum of different kinds of stresses that I have seen cause illness over the years, with the idea being that a reader can find at least one story that resonates for them personally and that will give them insight into things that may be hidden from them at the moment or only partially recognized at the moment. These issues, particularly the childhood issues, it's very hard sometimes to see the impact that they're having, because when you're growing up in a difficult environment, you don't have a parallel childhood to compare with. You just have the one that you're living. and you often have to take the emotional reaction to what's going on around you and stuff it in the back of your head just so you can survive. But the drawback to that is that when you're an adult and you look back and all those emotions are locked away somewhere, you may not really perceive just how difficult it was. One of the techniques that I use with my patients is to ask them to imagine having to watch one of their own children grow up in the same environment. And that very frequently brings it home to people just how much they had to overcome in those early years.
Life is a tough proposition. Stress is never going to go away. This is something that I often say, life happens. So to deal with a lot of stresses, one of the things I would recommend to people is that they find some way to get certain things out, and the therapeutic process, writing often helps. Sometimes talking to someone can help you tremendously. But is there anything you would recommend that we want people to be aware of that they can do for themselves to get a better awareness of why they are experiencing so much pain and discomfort and how they can help themselves get well?
Well, there's a lot. You mentioned writing, and that turns out to be a very powerful technique. I have a lot of my patients who survive childhood stress write a letter to the people that treated them badly, not to mail it, just to write it, because when you start putting pen to paper, it has a magical ability in many cases of being able to pull thoughts and emotions out of your head and onto that page that you might not have fully appreciated were in there. And many of my patients, once they start writing, just more and more flows, and the more that flows onto the page sometimes, the less will be flowing into the body afterwards, and that's a good conversion there. Another group of my patients are the kinds of people that take care of everybody else in their world but never quite get around to taking care of themselves. And these individuals often, again, we can trace the roots of that issue back to when they were children, and they didn't get sufficient opportunities to play. They might have had too many adult-level tasks put on them. They might have been having to pay attention to alcoholism, drug abuse, or violence in the home, thing that prevented them from just being carefree, playful children. Because when children are playing, they are learning essential self-care skills. And if they don't learn those as children, then as adults, they oftentimes are the kinds of people who are like the Energizer Bunny on a treadmill that they never get off. So those individuals, I want them to spend 4 or 5 hours a week purely on themselves, purely taking care of themselves, putting themselves on the list of people they take care of, engaged in activity that has no purpose but their own joy. And it can take months to learn how to do that, but once they've got that skill, they will have it for life, and it will serve them very, very well.
I know of a man who was very much involved with a lot of public work, and one of the things that he did, he would take one day a week. He would not answer the phone. He refused to let anybody know, excepting his wife, where he was going or what he was going to be doing, and sometimes they'd do things together. But he made that mandatory, and he said, I don't care if we're going to war. It doesn't make any difference. I'm taking every Wednesday. And he did that, and that enabled him to feel like he could breathe. And more than that, he wouldn't work on that day. That was, you might call it, his Sabbath. But a lot of people got very, very anxious about that because they'd want to reach him during a work week. And he'd say, nope, this is for me. This is it. That's the way it is. And his wife totally supported it. And he lived to be a ripe old age.
Yeah, that's a man who has a tremendous degree of self-awareness of his own needs. And, you know, I really applaud somebody who's able to do that. My patients very frequently, if they take even 15 minutes for themselves, they start feeling guilty about it. You know, they start thinking about all the useful, constructive things they could be doing with that time apart from taking care of themselves. So it's a barrier that they have to overcome. Their bodies are very frequently trying to tell them that they need a break, but they don't know how to read that signal until we have a fairly long discussion in my office, quite frankly.
You have a checklist for working with doctors. I can't tell you how many times people have talked to me about their frustrations of dealing with doctors. Now, you have a checklist in your book. You say, try to bring records of previous medical evaluations of your condition. Write a list of your major concerns, trying for no more than 4 items, which is important. Insist on presenting all your major concerns, preferably before your doctor begins questioning you. Start by saying, doctor, I have blank concerns to talk to you about today. And then you fill in the information, of course, with a blank. Be sure to mention any symptoms of depression, anxiety, or post-traumatic stress. And for physical symptoms, describe their location, timing, when they began, how often they occur, any connection to stress, and factors that relieve or worsen the symptom. And bring a list of all your medicines, including non-prescription medicine, herbs, and supplements. And tell your doctor if you're using tobacco, alcohol, or illegal drugs. And if you're struggling with one or more stresses, ask the doctor about resources that could help you. Now, that is an excellent checklist. And what would you say if a patient says, well, I can't even get through to presenting my concerns when the doctor cuts me off? What would you tell them?
Yeah, and the doctors are going to do that. So I emphasize, particularly when I speak to the public, that the way doctors are trained, when you start presenting your symptoms, they are immediately, their medical brain is going to start trying to think of possible causes for your symptoms, and they're going to start coming up with theories in their head of what could be causing your illness, and they're going to want to check those theories out, and they're going to do that by asking you questions. And the research has shown over and over again that most doctors will interrupt you to ask those questions in about 20 seconds after you start talking. So I try to prepare my patients for that and tell them that you need to politely cut the doctor off when they do that. Don't answer their question until you've got all of your 3 or 4 concerns that you have out there on the table, because you're going to make life much easier for the doctor and for yourself if you get all of those things out there first and then let them start firing away with their questions. But you have to be prepared for the doctor that's going to try to barge in on you right off the bat.
You have a patient, Emma, that you discuss in the book, and she's in her 80s. A lot of doctors, sadly, will just say, if you're in your 80s, what do you expect? I mean, I've had clients tell me this. The doctors will say, well, you're an old person. So what do you expect? This is what happens to you. But Emma was a case, and she reminds me of someone that I am aware of. I have a client that's in close to her 80s who has gone through tremendous post-traumatic stress, and it's been going on for years. And it's really, really something that you have to have a lot of patience with. And Emma, tell us about Emma, because this is a very dear soul, and it brings to light how emotional situations can cause a physiological condition that's very, very real to go on for a long, long time.
Yeah, she was an unusual patient in terms of how long she was ill. I mean, she, in my 25 years and the 7,000-plus patients that I've treated with stress-related symptoms, hers was the longest. She had been ill for 79 years, and when I asked her, you know, how long she'd been having her stomach pains, and here she was 87 years old, and she said, well, she'd been having those pains since she was 8. So, you know, that in immediately led me to ask her if there had been anything difficult or stressful in her life at that time, and sure enough, it turned out that a couple years before that, when she was 6, there was a new baby in the family. There were several other children. She was the oldest daughter. And mom was real busy. It was on a farm in the Rocky Mountain area. And she was given charge of that child at the age of 6. And she took care of that child the way another 6-year-old girl might take care of a favorite doll. She was with that kid 24/7, feeding him, changing him, playing with him, singing to him, sleeping with him. And then the tragedy occurred when she was 8. The child developed a burst appendix and died. This was in the 1920s. No antibiotics. Remote rural valley in the Rocky Mountains. No hope for a 2-year-old with a burst appendix. And quite naturally, as anyone would expect, she felt horribly guilty over this. Some things happened at the funeral that made her feel even more guilty. She was in a state of shock, and it turned out she was the only person in the church that wasn't crying, And somebody pointed that out and said, gee, you must not care. You're not crying. And that just multiplied her guilt exponentially after that. Within months, she heard about a baby being born on a neighboring farm and decided, you know, she had to go over and start taking care of that child as a way of achieving atonement for her guilt. And it just went on from there. She started having stomach pains. She took care of children all her years growing up. She put herself through school taking care of children. She chose as her profession to be a pediatric nurse. She had four children of her own and raised them extremely carefully, as you might expect. But she had these stomach pains starting at age eight, and they just continued on. She had diagnostic tests all down through the years that didn't show anything. And when she got to me, 87 years old, and there wasn't a lot we could do at that point. It was so ingrained in her, but I did have her write a letter to the deceased baby, just as a way of trying to express her emotions verbally, and that seemed to help. It didn't have as big an impact as it does with many of my patients, but it was the most we could do for her after so many years.
And she ended up not coming into the doctor's office so often. And you discussed it again with her.
Yeah, that is true. It did seem to have that impact. You know, I had heard through the grapevine from her regular doctor that she was still having the symptoms, but they must not have been as severe because the number of visits that she had to her doctor definitely showed a significant decrease.
Well, Dr. Clark, it's been a delight talking with you. For those of you listening, his book is called They Can't Find Anything Wrong, 7 Keys to Understanding, Treating, and Healing Stress Illness. Now, you have a website, stressillness.com. If you have gone through situations and you just say, I've got to get to the core of this, if it is stress-related, why not take your life in your hands and say, I am going to explore this and ask questions. And I think the book is just such an eye-opener. Who knows, you might even be able to help a friend. Again, stressillness.com. They Can't Find Anything Wrong, the title of the book. Dr. Clark, thank you so much for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-3900. 1-800-327-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I know we've got a caller on the line, but before we go to that caller, I want to give out the telephone number should you want to call in and chat with me as well. This worldwide toll-free number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, I want you to be sure you have a pad of paper and a pen handy because I have a luscious, luscious chocolate recipe that I want to share with you that with the upcoming festivities, not just for Halloween, but hey, the holiday season kicks in big and strong after Halloween passes, which is next week. So I've got this wonderful recipe that I know you'll enjoy. Few ingredients, but just beautiful presentation. So I wanted to let you know about that. Let's show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show. Let's go to our first caller of the day. It's Wendy, and welcome to the show, Wendy.
Hi, Donna.
Hi, where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from West Virginia.
Where in West Virginia?
Oh, I'm about 2 hours southeast of Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, West Virginia. I don't think I've ever been in that area.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm about two hours southeast of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Okay, there we go. I thought, okay, that's interesting. Pittsburgh, West Virginia.
Maybe there is one.
You never know, Wendy. You
that's
just
right.
Never know. Now, Wendy, the first thing that I am looking at with you is hesitation. And the word hesitation is sort of in a blue-green kind of a color. And you're usually a very decisive person. It doesn't take a lot for you to be able to put information together and say, all right, I've got this, 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 and this, and this, and you make your evaluations and do whatever has to be done. But the hesitation, I think, this time has to do with you on a personal level. And you are concerned about taking the extra time that you need to really ask yourself some very significant questions, because you're looking at, I think, both a lifestyle change as well as a career shift. And when I'm looking at this, I encourage you to take the time you need. If you take the time to really ask yourself those questions that are most significant to you, you'll be able then to sift out and away a lot of what you otherwise may think, I just can't stop being involved with. And there will be a sense of peacefulness and quietness that will come into your life that will actually give you more awareness of what you need to do to achieve the momentum that you want so that you can go after what is most significant to you. Now, what's interesting is that it's not so much related to money. This is something else. And I really think down deep, you are a very sincere individual who loves to teach. And you thoroughly enjoy passing along whatever you know to others. But I want to say invest in yourself first. If you wanted to become a culinary chef, take the classes. Don't not do it. Take the classes. It's okay. The world will keep spinning, and you're going to be able to spin more in harmony with it if you're investing in yourself. Many people might say you're selfish. Okay, be selfish. That's all right. Usually when they say that, they're being very selfish because they want your attention, they want your time, but they don't want you to give what you need to yourself. And when you do give to yourself and you are willing to invest in yourself, what happens is that you actually end up being able to share more and give more with others. So you're changing a direction. It may take you as long as a full year to a year and a half to determine all the fine-tuning that needs to be done. That's all right. Do what you need to do. And by the way, I want you to take care of yourself physically. You're getting too run down. You are just in this level of fatigue that makes you vulnerable. So if you have to skip watching television or not going to an event or whatever, get your rest. Take time to take care of yourself. You will not regret it. Your health is going to be better, and your stamina is going to be outstanding. And if you feel like taking a nap sometimes, take a nap. It's okay. Nobody cares. If they do, that's their problem. You take care of yourself. Do you have a question for me, Wendy?
Well, you're right on target about career change and lifestyle change. You've been on target with me previously. So I think you answered all my questions. I'm sorry about the echo. I don't know what that's from.
Oh, well, don't worry about it. That happens sometimes with technology. It's just what we have to deal with.
I was glad to hear Dr. Clark, because that's the field I'm going into is PTSD therapy. I'm taking therapy, but I also will be working with patients. That's the job offer.
Wow. By the way, I have a book. If you wanted to call me at my office, there is a very, very fine teacher who I believe he's in New York. I don't remember what area of New York, but I can see the front of his book. And there is a textbook on post-traumatic stress syndrome that I've referred to a number of people who have an interest in this very area. And he was a guest on my show, and he just is outstanding in what he has written. And I think for your interest area, it should be a must-read. So Dr. Clark's book, I think, is going to be invaluable to you because of the perspective he has as a physician and how he has utilized it to help his patients. And then this other gentleman that I'm aware of who has worked with veterans, police, and fire officials and individuals in that area of line of work, I think that would be very informative. So feel free to call me at my office, and I'll be glad to give you the name of the book. And if you should get my voicemail, just leave your name and your phone number, and I'll get back to you. And be sure to mention that you are wanting the name of the book and the author, and I'll be glad to give that to you.
Well, thank you very much. I wanted to mention real quick, there's a wonderful program in the Veterans facilities that are dealing with PTSD, day program and live-in programs that are dealing with mind and body spiritual health and pain management and stress, how it aggravates pain. And it's fascinating that Dr. Clark was talking about the same things.
Mm-hmm.
But now the veterans... medical centers are now addressing those same issues.
Well, I think that is wonderful news. And for those of you who are listening that may have people that have symptoms or you've got somebody, a loved one, that is going to be coming back from Iraq, there are so many issues that are just pushed under the table and have been for so long. And it's good that we can talk about them today. And you don't have to have a feeling of shame about it. If you need help, there are venues. And if, especially with veterans, so often they are expected to have a stiff upper lip, and gee whiz, you just don't, you know, that's just the way it is. But if you have somewhere that you can go, that you can talk to someone, it makes a world of difference. So, Wendy, I really appreciate that information, especially for those that may have loved ones coming home, and they can't figure out why these people aren't doing things a certain way, and they're just all kinds of trauma that they have no idea that these people have gone through, and they are living with it. I had an uncle from World War II that's what he was going through, and he almost killed his wife, not because he wanted to, but because he was reliving the war and seeing men dying in front of his eyes every night of his life.
News reports of the current war are apparently triggering a lot of the Vietnam and Korean
mm-hmm.
War veterans.
Interesting.
And the Iraq One.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's
that's pretty significant. So congratulations on going into an arena like this that is so challenging, because there are ways of helping people. It really can work.
It's amazing, and I'm very grateful for it. And I'm grateful for you for having Dr. Clark and your show, and thank you for the information.
It's my pleasure. Much success to you, Wendy.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebel, and we're going to be going on a break in just a moment, but I want to let you know who is coming up to be my guest next week. We've got a terrific lineup. We've got natural alternatives to vaccination. Yes. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not excited about the swine flu vaccination, and I do not hesitate to say that publicly because there's too many questions, and not enough answers and assumptions when it comes to getting vaccinations just are not acceptable to me. So we're going to be talking with Dr. Zoltan Rona on Monday. Then William Whitecloud is going to be our guest, The Magician's Way. I'll let your imagination float around with that title. And then we're going to have a little bit of Bewitched. Yes, we're going to be talking with Linda Wisdom, and she has just come out with, she's got four books. They're just absolutely adorable. They're totally frivolous, and they're about a bunch of witches. Ah, yes, he's got a special background. So we'll have fun with that. And then David Duvall is going to be sharing with us music. And if you have ever heard Shakespeare and you think, boring, well, I want you to know we're going to put Shakespeare to music. That's right. And we're going to be sharing some fun stuff with you. And David is dynamic. He's been a musical director for years. These are two productions that he has come out with, and I am just really excited to be able to share with him. And we may have a mystery guest on the 30th, which, of course, is the day before Halloween. So lots of good things going on. This is Donna Sebo. Have that pen and paper handy. We're taking a break for just a little bit. When we come back, we are talking chocolate, one of my favorite foods, mandatory for a good life. This is Donna. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. All right, for all of you chocolate lovers, when I found this recipe, I thought, no, this can't possibly work. It only has four ingredients. But I'll tell you what, if you wanted to do something that really was going to be super, super special, this recipe is so easy to do. Now, you are going to need some items that you might not typically have around, but you can pick them up at your local grocery store. So let me tell you what you're going to need. You're going to need those little paper candy cases. You know, those little cups that you find when you open up a box of candy, like for Valentine's Day. Well, they have them, and you can get them. And you, if you get them with foil, then they're going to be a little sturdier. But this is what you're going to need. You don't need 10,000 of them. You're only going to need a few. But if you buy them, you're going to find that they'll last you for a while. But this is absolutely wonderful if you want to do something special as a gift, or if you wanted to have something very, very special as for tea. Of course, I'm a tea person. But let's say you had people over and you wanted to have some little kind of sweet and you wanted to really impress them. Oh, this is so cool. All right, got that pen handy? You're going to need three and a half ounces of white chocolate, 3.5 ounces of white chocolate, and then you're going to need 5.5 ounces of orange-flavored dark chocolate, 5.5 ounces of orange-flavored dark chocolate. Then you're going to need 2/3 of a cup of heavy cream, 2/3 of a cup of heavy cream, and 2 tablespoons of confectionery sugar. Now, this is how easy it is. You take a regular cookie sheet, put baking parchment on it, and what you want to do, that 3.5 ounces of white chocolate, you want to melt it. And you can do that in a microwave. Just do it like maybe every 10 or 15 seconds, and check it and stir it until it's melted. And what you want to do then is spoon the chocolate into 20 of those little paper candy cases. And you want to spread it up the sides with a small spoon or a pastry brush. And I'd recommend a small spoon, the back of the small spoon, the tip of the spoon, and spread it all around the case. And then just make sure the sides don't flop over and just, you know, pull them up. And you want to put them upside down on the prepared cookie sheet, and you want to let them set so they're on the parchment paper. Now, once that chocolate has hardened in those little cases, and they're just, it's not going to take long at all. When they're totally cooled and set, you want to carefully peel away the paper cases. Now, the filling that goes into those cases, you take and then melt your orange-flavored chocolate and place it in a mixing bowl with a heavy cream and confectionery sugar, and you beat it until it's smooth. Now, you chill it in your refrigerator, and you need to stir it occasionally until the mixture becomes nice and firm. Now, the reason you want it to be stirred is so that you don't have separation. So every once in a while, you just go in and stir it. You're not going to have a huge bowl of this, by the way. So you're just going to go in and stir it. But you want it firm enough so that you can then pipe it. If you have one of those piping cases where you have tips, you can do that. Or you can just, when it's firm, put it into a plastic bag. That's right, just an ordinary Ziploc bag. And make sure you get the air out of the bag. And leave it open at the top, and then snip the bottom, and then you can do that. And then when you're finished, you can just throw the bag away. You put your filling in the pastry bag, like I just said, and if you want, you can put a star tip on it and pipe a little into each case. Now, you don't have to put a whole bunch, but you just gently swirl it in. And all you're dealing with are 20. And right there, you have a candy, so to speak. It's almost like a mousse, but not quite. Now, you can do a couple of things that are variable. If you find that the cases that you're putting your chocolate in to make these candy white chocolate cases, if you don't find that they're holding their shape, if they're really droopy, then you might want to use the foil cases, if that is what you find you need to do, or just double the thickness. Instead of using one paper case, you use two. And you want the smallest candy cases you can find for the cups, because this a little bit goes a long way. Also, what I wanted to say to you is you could use other flavored chocolates. That's right. If you wanted to have like a coffee-flavored chocolate instead of the orange-flavored chocolate, but you want to use the dark chocolate. If you prefer milk chocolate, you could substitute that. And if, again, you have a particular flavor, like a cherry-flavored chocolate, a mint-flavored chocolate, you could do that. And then if you wanted to decorate the chocolate, you can do that, too. Your imagination is your only limitation here. So you could do a lot with it. If you don't like white chocolate, then substitute dark or milk chocolate, whatever is your preference. Just remember, you have to have those little cases that it's in, so, and then turn them upside down on the parchment paper on your cookie sheet. They are beautiful. You will impress people, and you know what? You'll even enjoy it yourself. 4 ingredients to make a dessert, a snack, so exceptional. Can't you see that in one of those little tins that you would give as a gift, and you have those there, and you made them yourself? Oh, I think it's marvelous. Good food, good friends, good life. That is optimum, to be able to share something with people that you love. And I know we're just about out of time here. Have a fabulous weekend wherever you are. Weather is changing. If it's stormy or rainy like it is here in the Pacific Northwest, do take your time. Don't be in a hurry. Remember, the world just does keep on doing its doing, and we want you back here. Same time, same place at bbsradio.com, right here for the Donna Sebo Show on Monday. So we'll talk to you then. Have a magnificent weekend. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. When challenges knock on your front door, don't be afraid to open that door to find out what they are, because you may have a magic formula that you'll be able to share with others so that those challenges not only can be overcome, but they can lead you to something bigger, better, and greater. This is Donna Sebo. We'll talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.